Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. This is episode 127 on the, well, let me do my math, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9th Genesis album. Am I right?
I think so.
Six, seven, eight, nine.
Yeah. You know, from Genesis to Revelation.
Six with Peter Gabriel, and another two with Hackett, and then this one. Yeah, nine. Okay, slow math. That's what you get at Radical Research.
We're really good at math.
What's that?
I said we're really good at math.
We are really good at math. Those are the dulcet tones of the Half Man, Half Biscuit. You know them by name. I don't need to name them.
What's up, everybody?
BHG in the house. So Patreon, let's talk about Patreon, man. Patreon.com/Radical Research Podcast is where you can make a small monthly donation at your level. We have various levels to choose from. We haven't started putting anything out, especially for Patreon people. I can know that's a thing out there in Podland, but we are taking that slowly. We don't want to promise it just to get people to support. So all we ask is if you really like us and you really want to give any little thing to our cause, that's the best way to do it. I want to thank a few people that did that since the last episode on Thule with John Holm, which was a wonderful episode. And thank you, everybody, for your feedback on that one and the Anathema Eternity episodes before that. I think those are two of our most listened to episodes. Kind of crazy, but glad about that. Patreon supporters since last time. We love you guys. Hanos M., Henrik Item Kirka, I know that Norwegian has been listening to us for quite a while. Thank you, Henrik. John Cobbett, we know that name from Hammers of Misfortune, Vol, and many another. Thank you, John. And Jarno Virtanen, who I believe is Finnish. So nice spread of countries and people. Thanks, guys. Again, you can support us at patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast. A couple people, one of them being Jerry Hess, one of them being Andre Jomuskins. I'm definitely butchering that, Andre. I'm sorry. They gave the old way at the PayPal address, and we don't really push that much anymore, but that's really fantastic. The ID there, if you want to just pay directly, a one-time only thing, is radicalresearchpodcast@gmail.com. That's our PayPal ID and our contact address. Jerry just said one thing with his donation. Quote, you are awesome. Is he right?
Well, you know what? Let's do our best to prove him right and talk about Genesis.
Well, we will. But first, I want to say about Andre. Andre also gave via PayPal, and he said he loves Voivod, Fate's Warning, and Anathema. And that's pretty much what we do here, right there. In a nutshell.
He's a friend of ours.
And last but not least, radicalresearch.org, where you can get the remaining copies of Hunter's and Thomas's Deserts of Hex number 2. I've also put copies of Soul on Fire and Destination Onward back on the site, and only on that site. These were copies I found in a storage unit. I thought I'd lost all copies to either burning or smoke damage or water damage, but I found a few clean copies in a storage unit. So those are up and safe. Radicalresearch.org.
And I think so, I'm down to about 4 copies of Deserts.
Yeah, get them while they're hot.
Yep.
Because that flame's burning out. better to burn out than fade away. Genesis. And then there are 3. You're champing at the bit. Like a fucking champ.
I am, man. I think I've been wanting to do this for quite some time. I think I even pitched it well before 100. And we're getting around to it.
You did, I think, and it's also, and this will answer the question too of any listener out there wondering why we're covering this. Like, well, we do whatever the hell we want here. I mean, that's the main reason and the main maxim. You know, like, we'll just do whatever we want. I mean, it's definitely Radical Research territory, and I know that Paul Stolpe, a faithful listener and Deserts contributor.
Yep.
Is a huge fan of this album and recently put it on his playlist on our Facebook page. And he said, I think this is my favorite Genesis album. I think he was pretty emphatic about that. So to answer the question, we're huge Genesis fans and we go pretty deep with their catalog. The love for Genesis runs really deep here. And this is an album that would come up on your playlist a lot and mine too, but maybe even predates Radical Research where we would just trade playlists via email. Mm-hmm. And, talk to each other about what we're listening to. And you really listen to this one a lot. Where does it stack for you as a Genesis fan on the sort of, you know, your favorites?
Oh man. My favorites are probably, and this is odd that we've never talked about this. My favorites are probably Lamb, Trick of the Tail, and this.
Wow. See, that's interesting. That's an episode for another time.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is that between like the second and ninth, the line is so permeable. It's hard for me to commit to any answer.
Oh yeah. No, that's a very different. The good thing is we don't have to like narrow it down to three. I'm tired of all these memes on the fucking social media, which I try to stay off social media as much as I can, but I have to do it for, you know, this and my various book projects. And I see these memes where people are like, four albums from 1978, all prog, all great, choose one only. Like, no. Look, your three are amazing, and I can't pick a three. I won't pick a three right now, but I will say that And Then There Were Three ranks very highly on my list. It's as true a Genesis album as Trespass. It's as pure a Genesis album as Trespass. I absolutely love it. Released in 1978, produced by the band and David Henschel, recorded at Relight Studios in the Netherlands. I don't know a whole lot about Relight. Recorded in late 1977, released March 1978. What do you say we listen to Down and Out, the amazing opening track? How much does that rule?
I mean, that is essential Genesis in every way.
Essential.
Yes. Those really ethereal melodies that begin it harken back to, you know, mid-70s.
Yep.
But the intensity of that second section, this is a band with a purpose and with something to prove, and the ability to do it. But it's heavy, it's hopeful, it's majestic. It's like everything that you love about Genesis.
It's in 5/4 as well, right?
Yep, that one section is, yeah, the second section.
I should really have backed this up with fact or just to corroborate, but I think I was reading a couple of days ago when I made these snippets, and you selected a few, I selected a few. I was snipping in one morning, skipping along, snippeting, and I read, I think, where Chester Thompson, who was the drummer playing live for them at this point, you know, Phil would get back there at this point, but by now Phil Collins was the lead vocalist for the third album in a row. And so Chester Thompson, who is a man of incredible talent.
Well, I mean, look, if you were ever a drummer in any of Zappa's bands,
right,
certainly from the 70s on, you're an incredible talent.
Yeah, right. And he was, and he, right. And he was. So apparently he had trouble getting his head around this song. You know, and it caused trouble live, and Phil was having trouble apparently describing the lurch of that, that the thing we start out with on the album, and then that snippet is that dun dun dun, 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 you know, it's got. When I first heard this song, I was getting well into my Genesis obsession, the second and final phase of discovering Genesis, and when I first heard this album for the first time, and that's of course the first song, I thought it was skipping for half a second. Like I think I was like, oh, was I not paying enough attention? Because it has a skipping feel. It has like an irregular.
Yeah, actually, it might be like in 5:16 or something. Because it's got a really quick turnaround. I don't know. I haven't counted it. Just intuitively, it sort of has the cadence of a five.
Yeah, it's also a really. I think it's a heavy song. Genesis is not a band that is known for heavy or trades in heavy all the time. But, you know, when they get to the knife or squonk, which Down and Out reminds me of, when Genesis gets heavy, it takes that pastoral, airier element of trademark Genesis, really, and it makes it almost more evil. It makes it almost darker when they go there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are moments on Lamb that are incredibly heavy.
Oh, yeah. No, Lamb is their most fucked up, and I'll never say metallic, but certainly almost proto-metal elements. And you could see why a lot of bands, I know Dark Tranquility guys were really into early Genesis and, you know, Peter Gabriel era, and a lot of metal bands have cited them as an influence. But that album is definitely one we'd recommend to metal people. And the other episode we did on Genesis, we did it on the second half of the Lamb. The hindquarters, which you would find tasty in certain situations.
I normally do, actually.
All right, Undertow.
So this stands in stark contrast to what we heard right before it. I think I picked it for, well, one, we're covering the whole record, so we would have to pick every song. But I picked this because I think it's a really beautiful and elegant piece of pop songwriting. I think it verges on sort of the sentimentality of Moody Blues without ever going there entirely, but I think it showcases the album's real MVP, Tony Banks, providing not only super lush synth work, but also some really understated and complimentary piano work as well.
Well, there's the can of worms, Tony Banks, the only ever keyboardist for Genesis. Between him and Michael Rutherford, if you have those guys, you legitimately have Genesis. I really believe that. And I think that's why they could justify, you know, at least going on one album without Phil Collins, because he was not an original member by any stretch. Wasn't on the first two albums, you know, and not diminishing Phil's importance to this band. Good God, no. But Tony Banks, man, that guy, he's rated, but I'll just call him underrated, because I feel like people bring up Rick Wakeman for the more, I think, almost cartoony character aspects of the guy as they do his playing, which is amazing. I'm not cutting him down, you know, but the cape and all that. Tony Banks never had any kind of personality like that. He was such a Jim Mateos in terms of how he presented himself on stage, which was like, yeah, I'm playing this grand, fucking epic, cosmic music that will live forever. And I just look like I'm bored as living hell.
That's his, you know, his human personality as well. It's just very, very understated, very reserved, very public school English.
Lavish and really beautiful in the musical personality, right? Like he is, the shit that guy has contributed to this band and the sounds he gets and his just mastery on the instrument and his musical voice, man, it's amazing. He doesn't get talked about enough. And we've called this album before many times, Lush as Fuck. That's what it is. It's a Tony Banks. Every Genesis album is a Tony Banks album, but this one is especially, I think, really focused on him. Do you think that has anything to do with Hackett leaving? Because I do.
Oh, I absolutely do. Because, I mean, there was a void to fill from his guitar personality and some huge shoes. And I think it was probably sort of an act of support for Rutherford, who I think is one of the great rock bassists of all time, and also a very gifted guitarist, but not a personality like Hackett. You know, Hackett's just and you know, we've done a show on Hackett. I mean, he was an otherworldly talent.
I do think Banks, yeah, they were trying to fill the sound. I mean, and Hackett's interesting, and I know we talked about this on the Hackett episode and probably even in the Lamb episode, but we'll say it again. He was so stealthy in a lot of what he did where you didn't even know if it was a guitar. Is that keyboard? Is that Banks? Is that, you know what I mean? Like it was, he would craft these things that were so embedded cinematically into the music that I just feel like you lose a huge component there. And what they did was just, well, guys, you know, Michael Rutherford can play a guitar. I mean, he's done it many times on stage and on, I don't know how much on album, but certainly on stage, he has backed up with guitar a lot. He had that badass double neck bass 12 string, and the 12 string was the other neck. But I think going forward, he shows he's not Hackett level on guitar by any means, but every now and then he'll surprise you with like a amazing thematic type solo or just a cool creative idea. But yeah, I can say a lot about these guys. Obviously Phil's drumming. Well, we'll get there. Maybe we'll save it till song number 8, maybe. And I love Undertow. A lot of mystery in there. It's ballady, yes, but it's got mystery and that gauze over it that later Genesis ballads maybe didn't have.
And that's why I feel like even though people tend to emphasize some of the poppier aspects and the more concise songwriting on this record, it has, like you said, that mystery and the, you know, imaginative quality of earlier Genesis. It's just communicated in a different way.
Totally is. Yeah. I can draw a line back to Trespass with Undertow, which is always fun with the trio era Genesis when you're like, oh, that's that Genesis popping through, right?
Yep.
For all the evolution and mutation, it's still pretty core there. Ballad of Big. This is an interesting one. Why don't we just play it?
Trouble ahead, but the trouble didn't start until the man with the man. A woman ran out of hollering,
Pick that snippet.
I think I did.
Yeah, well picked. That song is always kind of gonna be the song for me where I'm like, okay, people have tried to convince me that Supertramp's a great band. When I started to get into prog, I learned that they had prog fans or fans of prog that were really into Supertramp. I'd only known that kind of big radio hit from the late 70s, not the 80s stuff. And they're always a band that I thought I should like on paper, but I just can't get into. I do like that one popular song, though. Like, I like the guy's voice. It's a little bit Geddy Lee-ish. So to me, that's all that to say. Ballad of Big is very super trampy to me if I liked Super Tramp. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I mean, it's my Super Tramp right there. It's kind of showy. It's kind of glammy. It's kind of a, then it gets serious. And you can tell the, and you can tell their players when they kick down into that
Oh,
second
yeah, that
movement of
swung
that.
part. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a little flamboyant, kind of like theatrical in the way that the best sticks is. Got that. It's sort of pompy in a way, isn't it?
I like that you mentioned Styx and Pomp because that the ending of that snippet, the last part that we heard, was very Styx, very Styx. And this is 1977, 78. I mean, Styx had an imprint on that sound, on whether you like them or not, American prog. I'm a big fan, actually. I've gotten bigger over the years. I love that band. No shame in it. And yeah, so it's kind of like Genesis reflecting the times a little bit, the way Rush were in the early 80s. And, you know, we've heard lots of bands do it, obviously. Priest, Judas Priest will do it. And in this case, I think it turns out really well with Ballad of Big. As the album goes on, I think here we get deep into the album. I think the next five songs to me are all just killer bangers. Here's one that I always thought some melancholy metal band should do, but I wondered if the use of the word, the noun snowman, kept them away.
I
Know, not metal enough or some dumb
don't know. I mean,
judgment.
yeah.
They don't say frosty, so that's a good thing. There's no frosty comments. There's no
It's
frosty reference.
more metal than Little Nemo.
We'll get there. This is Snowbound. I wasn't going to talk about Phil Collins' drumming until we got to Scenes from a Night's Dream, but I think there I want to, only because not so much his drumming, although the choices are good. His singing is amazing, and the keyboards are lush as fuck. Trademark registered, copyright. But man, I love his sound. Like, I just think the sound alone, it's kind of like you've talked about Alex Van Halen, and like you hear his drums, you know it's him. Not the playing so much, the sound of the drums, right? It's like that with Phil Collins, I think. And I think Snowbound shows that a little bit. That kind of flangey snare and tom production on them. Like he's done that on other albums. Like he really likes that sound.
And I mean, he even, he exported that sound to, other work that he did.
Oh, definitely. I think you can hear that sound all over his solo work. And then, certainly like Seconds Out and the stuff before this, definitely Wind and Wuthering. He just has a very particular sound to his drums, not to mention his playing. But anyway, man, Snowbound, beautiful.
It's almost too beautiful. I mean, it's just magnificent. And when you made that comment about a melancholy metal band, I was thinking about Empire's Era While Heaven Wept covering this.
I think it'd have to be a melodic voice for sure. Yeah. And
I
While
think
Heaven Wept,
Tom would do it justice.
Tom would do it justice. So would Rain on the vocals. I think if they, man, that's a good one. Well, that's worth getting them back together for. How
Just
much
that.
you want to pool our money? Maybe do a Patreon page for it.
Sure.
Get While Heaven Wept back together just to cover Snowbound for us.
Yeah, we're not, nobody's gonna hear it. It's just us.
Okay, so that's Snowbound. Man, Burning Rope. Hey Ken Golden, I got a news flash for you. Genesis is still gorgeous, epic prog in 1978. Get over it.
Yeah, get over it. That's one of my favorite drum parts on the record too.
Oh yeah. Man, I just think this song is so like there's no other Genesis song like it, much less other song anywhere. There's something about it that so has so much personality. I mean, the first time I heard this album, I was like, this was the one that stuck out immediately and still is a favorite Genesis song. I just think this thing, it's its own shape and color. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what that is about it. I feel like if I dissect it too much, I'll discover the key and it won't be that special. It's just a really special song for me.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's truly epic.
There you go. Yeah, I think that's it. I'm just kind of, I feel like I'm kind of, in its presence when it plays, and
Sure.
I'm just that. That thing owns me for sure. Yeah, good call about the drumming. I mean, of course, we're talking about Phil Collins, man. This guy it's well known that he's an amazing drummer. My
I actually
first,
think he's a
yeah.
little underrated too, though, personally.
You think he's a little underrated?
I do. I mean, I think he's, I don't think he's talked about enough as a drummer. I think his pop career probably eclipsed that, but I think that people should be listening to Phil Collins a lot more.
Oh yeah, especially on this sort of stuff. And like, let's talk about Brand X. He was also really
Cool.
prolific in the 70s. This is before his unlikely solo career started, because this guy, obviously everybody knows that story. What a solo career this member of Genesis had. And I love being, this will be a conversation for another time. You and I have talked about this, but I do love being in public, hearing Phil Collins, which you do often, especially you, Hunter.
Yeah.
But I love that, because I'll always like think to myself like a total nerd, like that's the guy that played on Nursery Crime, you know,
Yeah.
like
Yep. It really does happen to me like alarmingly frequently
I know.
at
That's
the
a point.
same place.
We might do a 0.5 to get back into that world. Like after this one, I think we're going to do it on Phil Collins in public in the Phil Collins grocery store rock or whatever. But no, Brand X though, like he was with Brand X in and out. He was in and out of that band basically. He didn't play on 78's Mask, but he played on either side of that, Rock and Roll in 77 and Product in 79, and super busy guy. And then around that same time, just the period of 77 through 79, he played on albums by Brian Eno, Anthony Phillips, you know, first Genesis guitarist, Rod Argent, Robert Fripp, and Dave Greenslade. It's like Jesus Christ, dude. No wonder his marriage broke up at around this time, because I know that was a big thing for him songwriting
Yeah.
wise.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
when Fripp's calling you in, you know.
Yeah, Fripp's calling you, Eno's calling you. Yeah, I'll take those calls. But Brand Fucking X is absolutely a future Radical Research episode.
Featured them on Fusion Decapitations, but yeah, they're
We sure did, yeah.
yeah, that's that one's coming for sure.
Yeah. So there's Burning Rope for you. Deep in the mother lode. Well, that's pretty good.
That's definitely a real highlight on this record for me. Like they used to have really long songs that were able to navigate through all these different moods and emotions. They're still able to do that within the context of far shorter songs.
Exactly. It's why I will often compare this to Rush's Signals, because they do the same. Rush will do the same thing on that album, yet
Yep.
it still absolutely has the essence that that band needs to have to be legitimately Rush, and in this case, legitimately Genesis. And Deep in the Motherlode, Yeah, again, Ken Golden. Like, I don't know why you don't like this album. I love you, Ken, and I'm not busting on you. I'm just having fun with you. But I've never understood why.
He just doesn't like the album?
I can't articulate for him. I don't want to speak for him, but I know he's told me that he doesn't like this album. This is where it ends for him. His last favorite is Wind and Wuthering. And this guy's a huge Genesis fan, amongst other things. He's a, you know, he's a prog nut. I have always argued that this is as proggy, to your point, Hunter, as anything else, in the sense of how they will go about taking you through these emotions and these movements and these evolutions in song, but just with greater brevity. That's all it is.
And I mean, I think that takes a real knack for songwriting to be able to do that.
Yes, exactly. And I think they were just getting there. I mean, they were about to get, look, I mean, you know, you can go really far back and see Genesis playing things in a straightforward way. They were forced to on the first album. And then they found themselves on Trespass easily. How John Holm of Agalloch doesn't love Trespass, I'll never know, but that's his beef. But love him too. Sorry, what was your point?
That doing this sort of thing where you're moving through feels and moods in a more concise framework requires a real songwriting skill.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And if you think back to early Genesis, then to my other point, you know, you had I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe on Selling England by the Pound. You had More Fool Me on that same album. You had Your Own Special Way on Wind and Wuthering. They were already moving toward simplicity in songwriting. Those are all pretty great songs in their own ways. But actually, I don't love Your Own Special Way. That's probably the only song by that whole 2 through 9 album sequence of Genesis that I don't like, that song. Do you have any of those along the way? I can't think of another one I don't like. I love them all, you know?
Yeah, me too. No, yeah. They're pretty uniformly great during that period.
And in this period, obviously, as we heard, Deep in the Motherlode, amazing. Deep in the Motherlode is one that snuck up on me over the years. Like, it wasn't one that stuck out. I have like real clear favorites on this one from the very beginning. Everything's about stayed the same, if not gotten a little better. But that song, Deep in the Motherlode, has gotten way better for me over the years. Like, that's tops on this album. That's one of the very best. And this one too, Many Too Many, the next one. This was released as a single at some point. Everybody knows this album by the last song, Follow You, Follow Me, which we will talk about in due time. Many Too Many was also released as a single. And I don't know. It just makes me wonder what it takes to have a hit single, because I think it's a better song than Follow You. I think it's an amazing choice for single. And it gets to your point about the kind of more concise songwriting. So what are your thoughts on this song?
Oh, I love it. And I also, Marty Ricken and Big Surprise, like it much more than Follow You, Follow Me. but yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a really like clever mix of, you know, pop songwriting and, you know, and prog ambition.
I love how wall to wall you are with this album, man. It's just the Genesis nut in me just is so into that.
I mean, yeah.
And I can also guarantee that Marty Ricken will not be listening to this particular episode. So.
Ever. It, well, certainly not this record.
No, he
probably just see the subject matter and I'll check him out next time.
Marty has famously said, like, he thinks he'd really get into prog, but he doesn't want to go down another wormhole at this point in his life musically. and I'm like, that is so bold to say and think. Like, I get it. I totally get it, right? You kind of almost want to resist, because he knows he'll just go bonkers. I think he would, too. I really do. I think he would.
It's a scary place to go bonkers.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome.
It is, but
can't get enough. This is Many Too Many.
Oh, my.
Michael Rutherford, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, indeed. And that's to your point, the really beautiful and musical thematic work he does. That's where he really makes his mark here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's kind of my favorite element of that song if I had to pick one. I feel like he's the one that gives that song its greatest strength, you know. That like at first you think it's a keyboard. I think Tony doubles him in the first verse, but it's just a beautiful approach. And I think he learned a lot from Hackett. I think you can hear Hackett there. I feel like the spirit of Hackett is in that song.
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, but that's exactly the kind of thing that Hackett did. You know, would you call it stealthy?
It's kind of stealthy. It's more, I think I've described it more as like sound effect or supporting theatrical six string. It's not a lot of typical guitar stuff. You know, he's not slaying a lot of the times, although I've seen Hackett a lot live, and to this day, and I think he's almost 80 years old now, 75, 80, still touring. He slays sometimes. Like, that guy will fucking destroy. I'm taking the word slay back because I know that's become like a teeny bopper, J-pop kind of thing now, but or K-pop or whoever.
But the guy can shred.
Yeah, Hackett can shred. Hackett to bits. I think I'm going to let you introduce the next one, Scenes from a Night's Dream.
Man, this is a really, really special song to me. I remember my first ever listen to this record, and I was really enjoying it, and then this one came on, and it just knocked me out, and it still does. It's exactly that kind of thing where the mood shifts so radically from the verse to the chorus,
and some pretty hot playing as well.
Woo. Yeah.
All in all, a short song and one of the, I mean, to me, it's second only to Burning Rope, and it has been since I first heard this album. Still is. I think it probably eclipses Burning Rope by now for me. This is now my favorite on the album. Just love it. And you know, Hunter, that one of my favorite things in music is killer playing on a ride cymbal bell.
Yes.
And there it is.
Oh, man. But all the, like, there's a lot of little fills and things in that song too that are quite intricate, but like he does it with such panache and
ease.
swagger. Like,
yep.
Yeah, no, it's just badass.
It's one of those things that he makes it sound easy. Plus, I also think that the gauzy production, like Genesis always favors, or at least in this era favored, like this gauzy production. I think they started moving away from it, definitely in Duke. They took off a lot of reverb. Things were sparer, drier. I love Duke, but it is what it is, right? I mean, it's just where they went. And this is that last one to me that has that gauzy, big sound, big wall of sound, Genesis production. It's almost, I mean, it's not Phil Spector-ish, because the style is so different, but like it to me has that. Like I feel like they always went for big production as well, really wide sounds.
The drama and majesty of this record require that kind of big widescreen production.
Yes. Damn right, brother.
Man.
Yeah, there's so much to say about this song. It's so fun. It's nimble. It's real quick on its heels, and that, but it kind of gets in this dark mode. You know,
yeah.
as you said before we went into it, shifts mood pretty radically.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you had it on your recent playlist, and I think I'm going to add it. I've been listening to the snippets a lot, but I haven't listened to this in full for a while. So it's I'm definitely going to put this on the key in the queue. Before we move on to the ninth song of 11, the cover art. I think when we talk about the production and the gauziness, even though this is not their best cover, and it's not Hypnosis's best cover, Storm Thorgerson and his partner's best cover, it's still pretty amazing. I've heard that Storm and Hypnosis and even the band don't love it. They say the idea was they still are totally behind, but they just didn't feel like they executed the idea of like all this trailing and movement and conveying what it's supposed to convey. But I just have to say that the skies in the background of the cover are, this is how this album sounds to me.
Totally.
It probably even looks darker than the music is, but I feel like this album gets dark and deep enough, often enough, that this cover works for them.
Yeah, I think that it communicates some of that mystery as well, because it's so inked. And I actually just learned that Hypnosis used models for the cover, and it's not the band.
I think a lot of people thought it was Mike Rutherford on the left, Phil in the middle, and then somehow Tony Banks on the right. I can never be sold on that. But I don't think I ever knew that. Thanks for the radical research, buddy.
You're welcome.
You're getting good at this.
Only took 127 episodes.
This is what I consider the classic Genesis logo and their best logo. And it's only ever used on three of their albums, one of which is a live album, Seconds Out. The other album is Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. But this is, to me, like the classic Genesis logo, the most t-shirt worthy one. Do you have a favorite logo by Genesis?
I do not.
Come on now. You just don't want to say you love the font on Invisible Touch.
The font. Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, that's everything about that cover and most of that album is regrettable.
Well, I like more of that album than you do. I probably like less of that album than John Holm, but I think most people in the world like that album less than John Holm, because he loves the shit out of it for rightful reasons. You know, it got him into music. But the cover's got to go.
Got to go.
Here's Say It's All Right, Joe, the ninth song of 11.
it's time to leave. Never seen the same face twice, never walked the same way. The little love that I have known, I keep to myself. If there's a fire that's asleep in my bed, I must need it to burn until it burns itself out.
See, the criticisms on this album, they just aren't justified, because I feel like no matter what you want to call prog, I think prog isn't one thing. It's a mindset. It's an approach. And it is a sound to some degree. It's certainly instrumentation. I think Genesis obviously fits right in. This is still prog.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I will say that though I like this song, I always felt like the chorus got a little weepy.
Yeah, the say it's all right, yeah. Joe. That whole, when they've described it as a torch song, you know, a sentimental ballad. They know that they're wearing the sentimentality on their sleeve at this point. I don't think they've been a band ever afraid to do it. Maybe they push it a little too hard on this one. And I'm going to agree with you. If I'm ranking these songs, I guess this is the second, my second, wait, sorry, no. This would be my 10th favorite.
I like that.
Yeah, this would be my 10th favorite. Well, I like it. I don't have a real problem with it, but I think I understand what you're saying. But again, you know, we're treated to the production, the performance. We're not going to skip it, right? In a listen. This is not an album that has anything skippable. And I used to skip the last song, but we'll talk about that pretty darn soon. This one now, the Lady Lies. Listening to this was a revelation, because this is one of those where when I first really got that real love of Genesis, when it finally kicked in for almost everything in their catalog too, it was, you know, you took that road trip with me and I was so, you love Genesis and I think you got sick of Genesis, right? Wasn't that the Dax Riggs road trip?
Yes. I remember you waxed extensive on the self-titled.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's probably
a record that I like.
Yeah, it's not perfect. I have a couple problems with it, but man, I love that album.
You spent like 10 minutes on Mother Alone.
And then I skipped second. I skipped Home by the Sea, which is awesome to talk about second Home by the Sea. I think we had that conversation. No, but yeah. So anyway, band I love so much. And so listening to this one for the first time in the thrall of that first love, I knew I loved this album very much. I was really surprised by it, knowing it was the Follow You, Follow Me album. Just kind of I don't know why I always assumed this one would be weak, but it certainly isn't. But it was Burning Rope. It was definitely Scenes from a Night's Dream. It was also The Lady Lies. Well, okay, let me throw in Down and Out, the first one. Those are the big four for me. Those are my top four on this album easily. That's a lock. And this song, Lady Lies, has this sexy but kind of menacing quality to it. Your thoughts on Lady Lies?
Same. And those are my four. You know, but there's a trend here, because you know, you and I like, you know, dark music. We like complex music, and I think that those four songs embody all those qualities.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They're sort of a piece, I suppose. Well, interesting that we agree again. Sorry, Marty.
I feel the dark, I live on the night.
the ensemble cranking in the way that Rush does in the middle of Free Will. I don't think anything's ever as good as that part of Free Will, but they are all three absolutely giving at the end of that.
Totally. And that it's total prog.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's total prog. I mean, there's so many, you know, surprising changes, odd note choices, or just unexpected chord progressions and things that you would think would resolve in a certain way, and they go in an opposite way.
Great point. Yeah, great point. I mean, as the penultimate track, it's great. Yeah, man. We come to the end of this album, Follow You, Follow Me, which most listeners probably know, even if they're not Genesis fans. Before we get there, we're going to talk about episode 128. All that to say, we're not going to talk about episode 128 because we don't quite know. We have a lot of ideas. And thanks every listener who sends us ideas for shows. We want to get to some of the ones we think are the most viable, but we're juggling a few things and it'll be fun. It'll be themed and it'll be metallic. I think that's kind of where we're going to land. Until then, thank you for listening. Man, you've made me love this album again, Hunter, in a new way. It's been fun to talk to you. I'm going to see you in less than 2 weeks.
So awesome.
We will listen to music for real together.
Yes, we will. It's back. Right.
Music listening is back.
Real listening for real friends and a real environment.
This is how we music. So thoughts on the one we're going to go out with. We were not going to come back after the snippet. It's a shorter snippet. Everybody knows this song, I think.
I used to not like it.
Same.
Yeah, just didn't like it. And I've known this song for ages. Sure. Well before I knew the record. And I just always thought it was light and was kind of cheesy, but taken in the whole of the record, it's still not a favorite Genesis song, but I think sort of how Vital Signs is pointing the way of Rush's future.
Wow. You know,
I think this song does it in a much less awesome way, but it sort of foretells, you know, what they would end up doing in, you know, a little later in the 80s.
Okay, one, there's very little that does anything better than anything on Moving Pictures, including Vital Signs. So you're right about that. And two, you just blew my mind because that's an absolutely apt comparison. I see it now. I don't think I've ever seen it or had it so cogently described. So good one. And that's exactly what it does. I mean, this might as well have been on Duke, right? And it's one that I still don't love, but I used to always end this album with Lady Lies. I just, even when I got into the album, I just was like, I don't need to hear it. To me, it's still a stronger ending with Lady Lies, but it sounds like you and me, we're kind of dancing around it, but it sounds like you and I have kind of submitted to this song. Like it's hard when you love this album to go, oh yeah, that's skippable. No, it's actually kind of a part of it now, you know? That's at least the way I see it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's part of the album story.
Yeah. So we're gonna go out with that. Thanks everybody for listening. Yo, give me a sign. What's your saga?
I need a saga.